Most of this episode was recorded impromptu on my iPhone. This is not a sit-down interview. I hadn't even planned on recording anything here, but TJ just started dropping bombs, so I pulled out my phone and pressed record.
I have $5 million in a house buried over there.
You had $5 million, like, buried in the ground?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there was in somebody's living room with a towel over it. And it was for emergency where I couldn't get the money in from Switzerland quick enough over here.
It was tiled? So under the tile. Yeah. That underneath, is some hiding.
Underneath a coffee table that was glass so you could see the thing.
I'm Jonathan Walton, and this is Cocaine Air, the TJ Dominguez story, episode 11, My Breakfast with TJ.
My mom was a born artist. I mean, but she took painting classes and sculpturing and all that at the early age of 10, 12, 13 years.
I'm standing in TJ's living room now, in his modest Fort Lauderdale home, surrounded by dozens of meticulously framed paintings depicting sweeping landscapes and tranquil vistas.
So your mom painted all of these.
Yeah,
they look like they should be hanging in a gallery or museum or something. This is some talent your mom has.
Mom,
is this oil on canvas?
Oil on canvas.
Wow.
She's very artistic.
I'm blown away. This is some like professional, like,
yeah, she was
classic there. Kind of style. I mean, I don't know a lot about art, but I can't do this. This is realistic.
I love art.
Oil on canvas.
That's Chinese lacquer art.
Oh, she does lacquer too?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
Yeah, my mom was really talented.
TJ's mom passed away in 1992, and his father died nearly two decades earlier.
My dad's biography today is in Florida University in the library.
Oh, wow. Because he was a senator in Cuba.
Yeah.
TJ's dad lived a truly extraordinary life. He grew up dirt poor and uneducated in Cuba. He was actually in the fields cutting sugarcane at just 10 years old when most other kids were in school.
He was 10 years old, he was out there chopping cane because my grandfather was an immigrant from Spain, poor,
yeah.
And went to Cuba.
But TJ's father turns out to be kind of a boy genius because he learns the sugar business from the ground up. First in the field chopping sugarcane as a child, and then as a teenager, he starts making some serious cash repairing all the machinery involved in harvesting sugarcane. And he quickly becomes a highly skilled and highly sought after sugar mill mechanic, along with his brother, and they make a fortune, enough to eventually buy their own sugar mill. And they both start making a lot of money, because sugar is in high demand all over the world. And in the 1930s and 40s, Cuba is exporting millions of tons of it every year.
Sugar was the petroleum of its time, and Cuba was the oil field everyone wanted to tap.
TJ's father's life is a true rags-to-riches story, from a penniless kid in the fields chopping sugarcane to becoming a titan of the sugar industry in Cuba.
So much later on, he decides, after he's very wealthy, he decides what I want to do is go to school. So he became basically a permanent type of student, had 7 degrees from University of Havana, never practiced the one because didn't need to practice.
He just liked learning.
He just liked learning.
Yeah. You know,
TJ's dad earned degrees in agriculture, chemistry, law, and political science. And eventually he becomes a senator. And then one day, as he's walking out of the Capitol building in Havana, a lowly beggar approaches him. I imagine when TJ's dad looked at this poor, penniless guy, he saw a version of his younger self, because the kindness and compassion he demonstrates in that moment is just awe-inspiring.
So he's coming out of Congress, right? And this story is told to me by my mom. Coming out of Congress wearing a drill, one, which is back in those days, it was cotton cloth, you know, tailor-made white suit, really, really beautiful. Matter of fact, later on, I had one here. And some beggar type guy was staring at my dad, and my dad made a comment like, can I help you? And the guy goes, oh, I was just admiring how beautiful you look, you know, that the beautiful coat and a suit that you're wearing. And my dad looks at the guy, yeah, you're about the same size. So he tried his coat on. So he tries it on, it fits you. He goes, come with me. He goes into the limo, takes his pants off and gives everything to the guy to take me home. So he gives the guy his suit.
Oh, wow.
That poor beggar never forgets the kindness TJ's dad shows him that day. Because years later, after the revolution, and after Fidel Castro wrests control of Cuba from the Batista government and starts going after all the wealthy people, like TJ's dad, taking their money, taking their property, and taking their lives.
Castro and his bearded troops were joyously acclaimed following his incredible victory over Batista. But through the months that followed, the leftist course of his social reforms roused new opposition.
Castro appoints hundreds and hundreds of the uneducated poor to high positions in his government. And lo and behold,
that beggar becomes the chief of security minister. He calls up my mom and dad and he says, I have your papers here, the order for your arrest. I can't stop it, but I can take it from the top and put it on the bottom. You need to leave the country now.
Oh my God. So he gave him like a heads up.
Left the country.
Were it not for that early warning to run, TJ's dad would have been arrested and killed.
My uncle and them, they couldn't leave in time. Grabbed them, put them in front of the wall and they shot them.
Oh my God.
Capitalistic worms. That's what they were classified.
So this was the brother of your father?
My brother and my mom.
The brother of your mother?
They owned
never got a heads up.
Never got a heads up. If my dad, incident had not happened.
You wouldn't be here.
No, yeah, I'd be in Cuba. Who knows what would have happened then?
Wow.
Yeah, it's just amazing how different little
how everything is interconnected. Yeah. So he was just kind to this beggar guy on the street.
And he gave him the suit. And then the guy never forgot. For that guy, it was a big deal.
I'm sure.
My dad was just another suit, you know?
Yeah.
The guy, and then, you know, years later, the guy still remembered that. And then he says, I can't stop it, but I can move it from the top to the bottom and buy you some time. You need to leave the country right away. I have the order for your arrest.
TJ is telling me all this as we're standing in his living room, looking at his mom's paintings. It wasn't a planned interview at all. And now TJ wants to take me to his favorite breakfast spot on the beach. So as we get into his car and start driving, I keep recording it all on my phone.
I'm going to be having a meeting with some people from New York that are flying down next week. And I'm looking between $3 and $5 million.
TJ's doing really well. He started a new cosmetics adjacent business, and his products are now in stores all over the country.
I mean, I'm just stunned. You're in prison. You're kind of starting from scratch again. And bam, here you are.
I started below scratch.
You started below scratch with marks against you.
Marks against me. No,
you had to like work to get to scratch.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
But here you are. You got this, we'll just say, cosmetic adjacent product.
Yeah.
It's in all these stores now.
Yes. So I haven't turned a corner yet to sit there and say, I'm standing strong.
I feel like you have turned a corner though, dude.
No, man, I gotta turn this thing into $1 billion company.
Oh,
I wanna know this stuff because
But your stuff's in California. Like how many states is your stuff being sold in?
Yeah, I'm in fucking Virginia, I'm in North Carolina, South Carolina.
I mean,
I'm
that's
in
amazing.
The West Coast,
and just
Coast,
in the past
California,
few years, you've been building that up.
Year and a half, I haven't even been in the store. Yeah.
But at this point in TJ's life, building a new business is about more than just making a lot of money.
And it's my legacy. Because later on, after I'm dead and gone, you know, my kids say, oh, yeah, that was a smuggler. And they can sit there and say, yeah, but look what else he did.
Look what else he did.
You know, he donated for children this, that, and that, blah, blah, blah. And he turned it into $1 billion company. Hard work.
Yeah.
With nothing illegal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I imagine that's weighing on you, and that's kind of what you want to prove to the world, that you can do it legit.
To me.
Yeah, to yourself.
Yeah.
And now that TJ's company is growing, there are a lot of investors coming forward who want in. Some of them will dangle $1 million at him, thinking it'll buy them a certain level of influence over what he does.
I'm not giving up control of the company.
Right.
I've been down that road,
yeah,
and I'm not going, and it didn't work out really well for me.
So I said, so whatever we do, I'm not giving up control of the company, and $1 million doesn't do anything for me. I said, I've got that right now sitting in a warehouse. And I turned it down. I told the guy, he said, listen, with or without your money, this is getting done. I said, if I'm on my knees and scratching the dirt, doesn't matter. I'm already on first base. All I got to do is round the corners and I'm going to hit home plate.
Yeah.
Don't bet against me. It's getting done. And then one other guy goes, I would never bet against you.
Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, mostly because I think dispensaries are a little overwhelming and pretentious. That's just me. You do you. But there's this company called Mood, Mood.com, that's changing the way people can buy cannabis. You know how most dispensaries make you choose between strains with ridiculous names and you have no idea which one's for you? Well, that's what Mood.com figured out. And by the way, you can get 20% off your first order with promo code Walton. If you go to Mood.com and click Shop by Mood, it'll tell you which strain does what. Want to be more social at a party? There's a flower for that. Need to focus and get work done? There's a flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, there's a flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and arrives in a discreet box. Best of all, everything's backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code Walton. So head to Mood.com and get 20% off your first order now. Now, this show is brought to you by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of them believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. With more than 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, and it works, with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you, so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences. And their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. From all I have learned about TJ Dominguez over the past 3 years, since we first started recording more than a dozen hours of interviews for Cocaine Air, he's the kind of guy you can drop in the middle of a jungle with nothing, and he'll quickly find a way to survive and thrive. He's a builder of empires. He did it with cocaine and Lamborghinis and cell phones and airplanes, and now he's doing it with this new business. But
a question that keeps coming up again and again from people who hear the podcast is, what happened to all your money? All those gazillions of dollars.
I forfeited everything to the feds.
You had to turn it over.
Everything.
Even Switzerland?
Everything. Because listen, if I have $5 million in a house buried over there.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you?
No, I had.
No. Okay.
I had to give that out.
You had $5 million like buried in the ground?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there was in somebody's living room with a towel over it. And it was for emergency where I couldn't get the money in from Switzerland quick enough over here.
It was tiled? So under the tile. Yeah. That is some hiding.
Underneath a coffee table that was glass, so you could see the fucking thing. The tiles were not laid in there with grout. Grout was just in the corner.
Oh, you can dig it up.
So
yeah,
I
yeah.
could dig them up.
Yeah.
But the idea was not digging that up. I didn't have to go into that safe. I didn't need to go into that safe. That was just for an emergency case that something drastic happened. I needed to get my hands on a couple of million dollars. I had to forfeit everything because the deal that the feds cut with me was very simple. We find you lying on one item or holding back on something, you get life.
So that $5 million that was buried in the living room
had to go to the feds.
No one would have ever known.
Nobody.
You dug it up and gave it to him out of fear. If one day it comes out, you're life in prison. I didn't know that. So all the Swiss bank accounts and stuff,
everything,
you had to turn that over.
Everything had to go over.
Wow.
Everything. And even if I had a Corvette laid over there. Oh, by the way, I got a Corvette that I forgot in a shop. I was afraid of my own shadow at that point.
Because you don't want life.
Everybody had left already. And then my other fear was the feds know pretty much everything. My own brother-in-law, who was my best friend, who used to package the money, told them about the Swiss account. told me he's the one that had the $5 million in his house.
Yeah.
So
so you were worried that if you're not completely honest and somebody else out, life in prison for you.
And somebody else was already talking.
Yeah.
Everybody. So how much did they talk? I don't know. I'm in solitary.
And for all his critics who say that the cocaine he smuggled was this evil and harmful thing that destroyed countless lives, and that Pablo Escobar was the devil behind it all,
I would definitely be more afraid of our drug company
yeah.
and of all the Pablo Escobars put together.
No, I agree.
Oxycodone, remember that?
Yeah.
That shit was hooking people left and right.
Drugs like oxycodone and fentanyl fueled the opioid epidemic, which has killed nearly 700,000 people since it began in the 1990s. Those powerful drugs were created by drug company Purdue Pharma and misleadingly mass marketed to doctors and patients as being non-addictive and safe, when they knew the opposite was true and they covered it up.
How does a company put out a drug without fully knowing and letting people know how addictive it is?
They were criminally misbranding the drugs. The reps were giving out bad data, and the reps were heavily incentivized by huge bonuses. The more milligrams a doctor ended up prescribing, the bigger the bonus the rep would get.
The company was eventually charged criminally and convicted, and then sued for billions and billions of dollars. And the Sackler family, owners of Purdue Pharma, were able to walk away with more than $10 billion in cash that they secretly withdrew from the company when all its legal troubles started mounting.
Did anybody go to jail?
No.
Was anybody shot?
Exactly. No, you're right. You're right, man. Dude, I agree 1,000%. I mean, if you compare what's more harmful, cocaine or this opioid epidemic that they created.
They created
it. They had their drug dealers go around to every doctor's office in the country incentivizing
and
them.
And everybody buying into it.
And they lied in the research.
They knew it was addictive.
They knew it was addictive, and they said it wasn't.
Yeah.
Ah, that's the real crime, and that's a good point. Did anyone go to jail?
And then I'm the bad guy, but
you're
they're
the
okay?
Bad guy. Yeah. But listen, some people are just have a belief, you know, like you're cocaine, you're bad.
Legalize the damn thing.
Exactly.
And put guys like me out of business.
Exactly.
This is not a crazy idea at all. In Portugal, in the 1990s, heroin use and drug overdose deaths were at an all-time high. So was the spread of HIV through dirty heroin needles. So in 2001, Portugal decriminalized all drugs, heroin, cocaine, marijuana, and everything in between. And they put all the money they would have spent on policing illicit drugs and prosecuting and jailing drug offenders into drug treatment programs. And heroin use went down by 75%. Drug overdose deaths went down by 80%. And drug-related HIV infections went down by 90%.
By the way, you see this here?
Yeah.
There's real monkeys.
TJ's driving me past a park now. We're a mile or so away from the ocean at this point.
Real native monkeys.
I love monkeys.
100 years ago, they turned loose and they've adapted.
Where are we?
We're in Dania.
Now we're in Dania. Okay,
yeah,
are we heading
here
to the beach? Go to the beach.
Yeah, well, that's what you do.
Can't believe I'm in TJ Dominguez's car driving to the beach.
We get to the beach and start driving around, looking for a parking spot.
Life. Yeah, I was going to park here. This is second.
Oh, this is nice. Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful.
I grew up on this beach.
Yeah, Dania. This is Dania Beach.
Yeah. Dania.
God, Florida is just beautiful.
This is a really cool beach. As a matter of fact, when you come down with your partner down here, you need to come here because I'll show you some really cool stuff here.
Or are you going to pay?
Yeah, I'm going
to. God, you're really with it, man. So you know how to get the app and pay for the parking on your phone?
Yeah, of course.
And you're 73.
Yeah.
You're almost as old as my mom. My mom would have no idea how to do what you were doing right now, like a kid.
Really?
You scan the thing, pull out the app, enter the parking. I mean, that's, you know, bam, paid. Nice. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
TJ takes me to this breakfast spot that he comes to all the time. It's a cafe on the boardwalk that looks like the Bahamas.
That little tiki thing right there, they'll have bands there. They have band right here in the corner they set up.
And they do calypsos.
Yeah, it's definitely like a vacation vibe.
It's a nice place.
Yeah, it's nice.
We sit down and order.
And I will have the breakfast tacos.
Okay.
Cool.
And pizza?
Yeah, I'm going to do the identities.
Perfect, well, thank you. My name is Shantae. Let me know if you need anything.
This is the first time I've ever shared a meal with TJ, and I'm posting a picture of us at cocaineair.com. Also going to post it on my Instagram, at Queen of the Con, because it's kind of a milestone for the both of us.
Thank you.
That is good. Ooh, thank you.
You're welcome. Sour cream, anything like that?
Oh, no, I'm good.
Sitting by the ocean, eating breakfast tacos, nothing beats it. We eventually head back to TJ's place, where I set up my professional recording equipment.
All right, say your alphabet.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Okay, that's good.
And right. TJ begins to tell me the most insane story about a dirty Broward sheriff's detective who tried to extort him. You see, before the feds started investigating TJ for cocaine smuggling, the local Broward sheriff's office was investigating him first. That's actually what led up to the federal case. And a BSO detective on that local case had the chutzpah to confront TJ and let the cat out of the bag about the investigation, and then offered to help TJ get out of it for a price.
Well, it just so happens, without naming any names, I knew somebody from childhood, let's say, that was with BSO. He came to my dealership. And he said to me, with my hand on a Bible, I could tell you, he said to me, if you give me $1 million, all these papers go away. And I said, what papers? And he says, the investigation we got on you, we know everything about you. And I said to him, I don't know what you're talking about. And he said, give me $1 million and the investigation goes away. And then I said, give it the best shot you got, get off my effing property. Don't threaten me. And then he said, you know, I think he said something about giving me 24 hours to think about it, something ridiculous like that.
24 hours
to think about
it. Some
bullshit like that, or something stupid like that. And then—
Do you wonder if in that moment, if you'd have given him the $1 million, you think he would have killed the investigation?
No, I think he would have taken the money, spent it, and come back a month or two later and asked me for more. And so I enjoyed throwing him off my property the first time.
And TJ actually knew this BSO guy from his high school days in North Miami. But ever since he started working for the Broward Sheriff's Office, his lifestyle always seemed leaps and bounds above his salary.
He's wearing a Submariner. Back in those days, I think the Submariner was $20,000 gold Rolex Submariner. How is it that you're a god darn cop making $20,000-$30,000 a year? Your wife's got this little beauty salon that's the size of a Cracker Box, and you're living in $1 million house and wearing a gold Rolex when in school, you didn't even have a car, you had a bicycle. You rode a bicycle as a senior. I gave you a ride home a couple of times. I bowled with you on Thursday. I knew the son of a gun from all through school.
Eventually though, the long arm of the law caught up with this dirty cop and he was arrested.
He got indicted, but he beat the indictment. He went to trial and he beat the indictment. He got indicted for like some sort of money laundering or things like that, but the guy was crooked as a day is long.
And other than trying to shake TJ down, the other mistake this BSO guy made was trying to do it at TJ's Lamborghini dealership. It was truly a sacred space for TJ, like a church or a museum. And TJ's dealership was unlike any other car dealership in existence.
I never allowed anybody to stay in cars. We don't even allow you to open doors. We don't do test drives. You want to drive one of our cars? Buy it. We don't do joyrides.
Yeah, because these are like, what are they selling? What are you selling these cars for at the time? What's a Lamborghini or a Ferrari go for?
Well, let me put it to you this way. My white Lamborghini, I turned down $800,000. The guy went up to $1 million. It could be anywhere. They used to go for about $1.5 million. But $1.5 million times five or six, you're looking at $600,000-$800,000
today. Right, in today's money. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But then I have to do some Duesenberg.
Right.
That belonged to Clark Gable. Yeah. Went for $5 million. I just saw it in the Hemmings magazine a little while back for $18 million.
No test drives.
This is better than stocks if you really know how to play exotics.
Because it's art, essentially.
It is.
It's art. You're it's dealing art.
You see Ferraris for $42 million. You know, yeah. It's art.
And I mean, it's a collector. They're beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Cars,
you know, somebody said to me, how could you spend so much money in a car? I said, how could I spend so much money in a car? How could somebody pay $150 million for a piece of canvas with oil on it? There's a lot more work that went into this car.
Yeah.
And it is art. It's art.
No, absolutely.
And it's art that talks to me. Yeah. And it takes me places very, very fast.
Yeah.
And speaking of very, very fast, there was one time back in 1987 or thereabouts where TJ is driving a red Lamborghini on Interstate 95 at 3 o'clock in the morning. And he's got a business associate with him in the passenger seat, a guy named Jose. And Jose is curious.
He says to me, you know, T, I've never really gone super, super fast. How fast does his Lamborghini go? Well, I guess it's the wrong thing to ask me. I said, let's find out. So I get on this thing. It was 0 mile, brand new car. And there's no cars in the road, pretty much, right? And I nail this thing. I'm on it.
TJ presses down on the gas pedal, and immediately he's going 100 miles an hour, then 110, then 120, then 130, and the red needle on that odometer just keeps moving.
So now I'm hitting right at 200 miles per hour.
200 miles an hour.
Right at that, And you get tunnel vision when you're driving really, really fast, and you memorize everything, and you can't look just right there. You got to look at the horizon. So now what happened also is this. The wing on the car that I had, which a Lambo, had a fixed wing. So what happens when you have a wing like this, and then a lot of air hits it, and you don't adjust for the angle. If you get too much downdraft on the back wing, and I push too hard here, what happens? The nose goes up. So when the nose goes up and a Lamborghini is basically almost sealed from the bottom, now you're riding a curtain of air.
TJ's Lamborghini is now airborne and he's about to lose control.
So I tell Jose, I said, shit, we got a problem. He goes, what are you talking about? I said, I don't feel the wheel. And he goes, what do you mean you don't feel the wheel? The next thing I know is kaboom.
Find out how TJ gets out of this one on the next episode of Cocaine Air.
And the guy screaming to another guy, no, it's not an airplane, it's a car.
To see some incredible photographs documenting TJ's life, go to cocaineair.com. And if you're enjoying Cocaine Air, please hit that share button and text it to your friends and family right now. And if you feel comfortable, leave us a 5-star review. Reviews really help other listeners find us. Cocaine Air was created, written, and executive produced by me, Jonathan Walton, for Jonathan Walton Media. Executive producers, Evan Goldstein, and the inimitable TJ Dominguez. Audio engineering by me, Jonathan Walton. Sound design and editing for this episode was done by Mike Smith. And the Cocaine Air cover art is by Bobby Animation. We've got a lot of fascinating untold stories like Cocaine Air coming down the pike at Jonathan Walton Media, so subscribe and keep an ear out. How crazy is it that TJ Dominguez only becomes a drug smuggler because he got scammed by not one, but two duplicitous con artists in his life? It would be wise to figure out who the con artist is in your life before they scam you. So pick up a copy of my book, Anatomy of a Con Artist, The 14 Red Flags to Spot Scammers, Grifters, and Thieves. Con artists are everywhere. There's probably one in your social circle right now, but you won't know who until they trick you out of money. The woman who scammed me out of nearly $100,000 was my best friend for 4 years.
You've been scamming us out of money this whole time.
I have not.
You have.
And during that entire time, she was scamming everyone around me too. But no one had a clue until she got their money. protect yourself or protect your elderly parents or your young naive kids or your friends and neighbors. Learn how to identify the con artist in your life or in the lives of your loved ones before they trick any money from them. I will show you what the 14 red flags are of every con artist working today so you can spot these soulless demons a mile away. My book is available everywhere books are sold, in hardcover and on Kindle and Audible as well. Just Google Anatomy of a Con Artist.